Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's so great, guys, that we are now less than 10 days. We are in single digits away from real, meaningful football. But of course, if you don't know by the shirt, or what this man's Twitter handle is, we're here to talk about the Patriots. Why? Because the world revolves around football, Sundays, and, of course, the New England Patriots. So with that being said, McGarvin, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm thrilled. Having a good day. How are you?
I'm doing good. We had some – before we talk about, like, what the official roster is, and also, guys, Pat Lane will be here in a second. Look, there's just other prior commitments getting in the way, you know. It's just – it's the nature of things. When it comes down to what happened today, I feel like there were some not surprising cuts, and there were some surprising cuts. So more than the not surprising, because obviously, like, we know some that weren't. Were there any that caught you off guard?
Outside of, like, the big ones? Like, all right, let's
see. Or anything that, like, came as a surprise to you, like someone you thought would make the 53.
Okay, so not really. I think it was, like, I don't know, it was pretty... I guess chalk, right? So, like, just going over, you know, who the Patriots kept and who they didn't, just had it in mind throughout the entire time. Like, all right, yeah, you know, these are the players that are most likely to make the roster. These are the ones that are not, you know, like with roster projections, like most people do. There were none that really blew my mind as far as who they cut. I had a couple who I was surprised they kept, but not really the other way around. I would say, obviously, number four was the biggest surprise just because I didn't think they'd actually do it, although I'm not in any way upset with it. I know Ty Montgomery comes as a surprise for a number of people, especially because he sat out the preseason finale. I always kind of thought that he could go anyway, but my stance right now is that he'll be back later this week. J.J. Taylor was another one that people had, like, oh, you know, he's definitely going to make it, and I'm like, eh. Not really. I've kind of stopped buying into the J.J. Taylor hype. Every preseason, that guy looks like the second coming of Deion Lewis, and then the regular season comes, and he's on the practice squad and never makes an elevation. But, I don't think any I don't think they cut anyone that was, like, too surprising, obviously outside of Bailey Zappi.
The one I'll say that was a bit surprising was Kevin Harris, but I feel like that's a practice squad move. I just don't see where anyone else picks him up.
For sure.
I said yesterday in my AFC preview show, because everyone was asking, like, oh, hey, why Zeke? And I blatantly said, we know that, hey, they weren't confident in the other two rookies coming up for a more prominent role, like how we saw. Like I said this, I'm like, Kevin Harris isn't ready yet. Pierre Strong, we obviously saw. Look, they shipped him off to Cleveland, yep, where he's going to play behind Nick Chubb, and I don't know who else is on their depth chart at running back. Not through the Browns podcast mainly, but so with that, I'm like, okay, that means one, it's like with shipping out Pierre Strong and Kevin Harris, like I said, probably it's going to be a practice squad move.
Yeah.
So now we know for sure, hey, it's going to be Ramondre and then Zeke. Ramondre is going to be your Swiss Army knife, where he's going to get those long down, like those long yardage downs, and then he's going to be used in the passing game. So where you can have the two RB sets, where you have Zeke in pass pro, and then Ramondre, you pull him out of the flat. So it's just. Moves that this roster seems like more than anything, like this seems like a very Belichickian roster, and I'm not mad about that at all.
Yeah, it seems like a roster that you would end up with if you have a bunch of injuries on your O-line, which, hello, here we are. They kept 11 offensive linemen. They put one on IR in Connor McDermott. He went on IR, season-ending IR, so he won't be back with the Patriots this year. Although, they will probably eventually waive him with a injury designation at some point in the future, and he'll be able to play for someone else, just probably not the Patriots. I think they were just put in a bind by just not having any offensive linemen. I think it's nice that Calvin Anderson returned to practice today, but I think that was a move that they were going to make regardless. I don't know that he'll be ready to play against the Eagles in 2 weeks. But I don't know. You kind of had to keep all of those tackles because you don't even know who's healthy enough to to participate, right? And then as far as the guards go, you keep your rookies. They didn't have a ton of depth there in the first place, so that's fine. It just seems like a roster that was kind of hamstrung by the lack of offensive line availability, right? I know a lot of people want to say it's a talent issue and these guys all suck and all that. I just don't think they have any healthy guys. And so you got to keep the guys that you do have, kind of figure it out, get a game plan ready, and, you know, go out there and execute. So that's what happened there. But then I also think on the other hand, there are a number of moves that were made that, you know, constitute, you know, mild surprise or mild shock or whatever you want to call it, that are the moves that you would make if you just really don't love the player anyway, right? Like, so you think of, I think, Bailey Zappe. I think we're going to keep coming back to him because he's the most surprising. Oh, my gosh, they cut the backup quarterback and, you know, Zappe fever, Zappe hour and all that from last year. I think Bill said it best. I think it was 2011. You don't waive a player that you're not willing to lose. So I think them, you know, waiving Bailey Zappe kind of signals that they want a better option at backup quarterback. Now, do I think Zappe is claimed? I mean, I think it's a possibility, but I don't know that he, you know, it's not a slam dunk in my opinion anyway. So there's a chance he's back with the Patriots, you know, as early as tomorrow at noon. But I think them waving him kind of signals that, like, we just kind of need a better player at that position. And I think that kind of goes along with, you know, running back and tight end, where, you know, there was talk about whether or not you kept Sokol or Ferks, or I think both of those guys are replacement level. You can, you know, waive them, and if you, you know, get them back, then great. If not, that's okay too. We can find a better player. Same kind of thing with the running backs. Kevin Harris was waived last year, made it to the practice squad, no problem, and lived on the practice squad up until, you know, his elevation against Arizona. And I think it'll be the same thing this year. Same thing with J.J. Taylor. I know it was, you know, people had it as J.J. Taylor or, you know, Kevin Harris. And I remember I was telling a friend, like, fuck it, cut them both. Because, like, they'll both go to the practice squad. You won't lose either of them. And if you do, it's not the end of the world.
It's one of those things where it will work itself out eventually. And for Bailey Zappe, who knows, he could be competing for another job. Hell, he could be competing for the starting quarterback in the desert, for all we know. Mm-hmm. But with him, though, like, I have a feeling that – because with Bailey, I think you and I have talked about this before, not about him, but who represents him. And who represents him, another Nicole Wynn client. So I feel like Nicole will be on the phones getting work for him. So yeah. I wouldn't be expected to see him claimed by, you know, like a not a bad team. Like I say, obviously, look, we all say Arizona's a joke because you have Josh Dobbs or Clayton Tune. So I feel like you could probably put up a Bailey Zappe above Clayton Tune. But with a guy like him, I could see him being on, like, you know, like a middling pack team where, hey, they need a backup quarterback and it's like worth an insurance policy shot. I could see that for Bailey, yeah. Well, like I said, I think J.J. Taylor and Kevin Harris, those are both practice squad. Question I have for you is, though, so after Bailey was released, everyone thought Malik Cunningham, QB2, he's waived as well.
Yeah.
Do we think Malik is claimed, or do we think he ends up on the practice squad? Because I think there's a more likely chance that Malik is with the Patriots practice squad than Zappe. I can see Zappe. People are going to look at Zappe's small little bit of work, I think, and someone's going to take a chance on
him. Yeah, I think draft status is going to play a factor in you know, Zappe's future in general. He's a fourth round pick. Someone out there is going to, you know, pound the table for him and really convince their GM, like, hey, this guy was a fourth round pick for a reason. Let's bring him in. Whereas Malik, I think he's an exciting player. But I wonder if we all got too caught up in the, you know, the 9 plays he played against the Texans where everyone's like, well, he's not going to make it through waivers. I think the next 2 weeks were instructive. He didn't get any reps at quarterback against the Packers game, although I'm sure he would have if the game had concluded as it was, you know, scheduled to. And then he got one drive against the Titans and, you know, didn't look any kind of way. But I think more importantly, the fact that you have to give up a roster spot to claim a player, a 53-man roster spot to do that, just kind of makes me think that he will go unclaimed. A lot of players don't get claimed in the first place because teams would rather just kind of work with the guys they're working with as opposed to, you know, bringing in a completely new guy and, you know, acclimating him to your system or whatever. I think there's a chance that Cunningham is claimed, but I think he's back. I think he's back, especially because the experiment to move him to wide receiver really didn't work. He had 9 targets, caught 1 pass for -1 yards, didn't really show anything as a route runner, didn't really show anything as a kick returner. I think if you're you're looking at Malik Cunningham. You're probably going to be looking at him as a quarterback. And I think for the Patriots, that, you know, that would be on the practice squad.
See, that's where I look at it from, where it's like you're saying, with the Green Bay game, like the Detroit game, I just like to mention that because I find it funny that the guy who I start my first ever Pats game start is in 5 years going to be on Twitter as that name, that random name of random Patriot. Everyone's going to be like, Bailey Zappe.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those like memory bank things that like we can keep for good time. But like, even more than that game, I look at the Cleveland game as someone taking a chance on him, because he went out there and really proved himself. And you and I have talked about this a million times. The Chicago Bears game where everyone was chanting, "We want Zappe," that game to me is still an anomaly, because we all know Mac wasn't 100%. I was very against Mac playing in that game. And you and I have talked about this. That was just a bad game overall. So, this is a team where, hey, the pieces are in place. I don't expect them to be done. You and I both had QB suggestions. You said Jacoby Brissett. I said Colt McCoy, because look, Arizona's the punching bag of the NFL, and they're doing it to themselves. But is there any other realistic options you think that they – do you think it would be a trade, or do you think it'll be a waivers kind of guy that they can go out and get? Like, what do you think is more realistic than just the overall going for a new quarterback?
I think the plan is going to have to be a trade. I just don't really see anything, anyone who's, you know, a free agent now or on the waiver wire who substantially improves your quarterback room, right? I think you need a player who you don't have to dumb the offense down to play, right? As they did with Zappe last year, which we talked about, they really dumbed down the offense. And, you know, we saw that once he was in a more complicated offense, he really struggled to, you know, adapt to the mental part of the game. I think realistically for Mac in his third year, you want someone who is more plug and play, a more veteran option. I just don't really know who that veteran option is. It's not like there aren't a ton of great backup quarterbacks out there. I saw Carson Wentz listed. And if he is the one, I will cry, because I think he is awful. But yeah, I'm unsure. I don't know where you go. That's why I kind of posited Jacoby Brissett. I think obviously he has some familiarity with the team. He hasn't played in Bill O'Brien's system, but, you know, he's played in Josh McDaniel's system, and they're similar enough. I think that would be a lot of fun, but I legitimately don't know. All I know is that prior to the cut, last night I was in a Twitter space, and we were talking about, like, you know, positions that worry us, and obviously we spent a good chunk of time on the O-line, and I kind of mentioned, like, hey, how does everyone feel about backup QB? Because, you know, if Zappe wasn't the only other competent passer on the roster, he wouldn't have a job, because he had a bad summer. He played poorly in the preseason, but it was just a matter of, like, it's him, Trace McSorley, and Malik Cunningham. Of those three, who are you trusting to back up your quarterback? It has to be Zappe. So the fact that they moved him, now I'm like, well, I'm unsure who you go to at this point. I just know that it needs to be someone who you can plug and play.
That's exactly it. It's someone that you can look at on your roster that you have confidence that if Mac were to go down again, you have confidence that they can go in, they can plug and play. Now, obviously, look, with Bailey doing that, like, two of his games were – the two games he legitimately started was Detroit and Cleveland, two teams that, like, look, obviously Detroit had a great end of the season, but that Detroit game, 29-0, plus 2, 0-6 on fourth down. That was a game, too, where I'll self-admit it, first grade it was to be there. I know I keep doing that to myself, but hey, you always remember your first. They shot themselves in the foot multiple times in that football game, and then Cleveland last year was just the hot mess that we've come to know as the Cleveland Browns. So I feel like you have to take those with a little bit of merit. And then, like we said, he came in the Chicago game, got the couple touchdowns, but like we said earlier, like I said literally like I think 5 minutes ago, that was a bad team effort overall. There's like there's no finger pointing there. Obviously, there was the Jaquan Brisker interception, I think Mac kicking him in the balls, but that's just old news, so we'll see what happens. But ultimately, I say this for the same reason why I still have faith in this team, because this roster on paper is better than what we experienced 3 years ago during a global pandemic. So as long as they have competent coaching with a decent roster, this team I still think has a chance to compete. And they're giving us the one thing that I ask for this year, and is that every Sunday they have a chance to win.
For sure, and that's all that really matters. I don't, like I said, I don't think this team is going to be like, you know, they're gonna come out as gangbusters and really gonna shock the world. Mm-hmm. I think they're gonna be about nine or ten win team, and they'll play competent football. But that's legitimately like all I need, right? Like I it's weird because like everyone's like, oh, the Patriots are gonna be mediocre, and I'm like, well, mediocre would be an upgrade over what we had last year. So bring it on. that's all that I'm hoping for with this team.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we can hope for. Like, steal a couple games that you're in that you let slip away from you. Vegas obviously is one we're not going to go down the rabbit hole. You and I examined that game enough. But when we want to come and flip on the positive side of players who have made the roster, I'm actually going to pull it up right now because, look, they put up a pretty cool graphic earlier today.
I like that graphic. Yeah.
Yes, so I have to. Sorry, my MacBook is being silly as I kill and fill time. Oh, hey, I'm going to go over to Twitter instead of watching us stream. So you see here, guys, this is the 53-man roster. Calvin Anderson, I'm not even going to read all the names. My biggest takeaway from this is that they highlighted, well, I think that's just surprising offense, defense, and special teams. But at the same time, too, I feel like it says something because there's a couple of key factors in – whoops, that is us. Unless you want to see double of Griffin McGarvin on YouTube, be my guest. So when you look at this roster here, not a surprise, but I like the fact – I'm not even going to say it like. I'm just losing my train of thought here. I'm going to ask you this question straight up. What do you think about the younger youth movement on the special teams front?
I'm excited by it. I obviously, you know, you have Boomin Bryce Behringer, the punter. They took him the sixth round. He has a monster leg. So I'm excited by that. Mostly because I was so sick to death of watching Michael Pilardi hit like 30-yard knucklers. And I'm like, what is happening here? Like that is holy cow. So having a punter who can flip the field again, hopefully he's not out there too much, but having someone who can do it in a pinch is amazing. I think Chad Ryland, I think you kind of had to go with him. I think he had the better leg. And it was like apparent if you ever watched them practice. Like I think Nick Folk was more consistent snap to snap. He's a Titan now, by the way. He was more consistent like kick to kick, but I think overall you want to go with the bigger leg because there were games and situations last year where the Patriots punted because Folk just didn't have the leg to get the ball to where it needed to go. And that was obviously disappointing. So I'm excited about that. But more importantly, I think they've shored up their coverage units, right? You have Amir Speed, the rookie, I think it's sixth rounder, DB out of Georgia/Michigan State. And then you also have Chris Board, who's listed as a special teamer. He's someone who can provide a little more on defense anyway. And then obviously you have Matthew Slater.
That's a Belichick player.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. That's a Belichick player.
For sure. And I'm pumped about that. I just think they needed better special teams players. I know everyone's so tired. Oh, special teams. But everyone hates special teams until you're, you know, giving up two touchdowns to the Bills and losing, you know, losing a game by 12 after giving up two, you know, kick return touchdowns. So obviously I'm looking forward to seeing how that works. But I think even outside of the core special teamers, I believe the Patriots only have, what, seven listed, and that seems like a high number, but obviously you have, you know, two kickers and a long snapper.
Long snapper.
But I think also it's going to be an improved unit by the fact that they have position players who will play on special teams who are just better at it. Right, you think of someone like Marte Mapu, who's a super smooth athlete. We got to see him in the Titans game; that was really fun. He's probably going to play a lot on special teams. That is a better option than bringing out the corpse of, you know, of whoever they had for running back there last year. Obviously, you had what's his name, Raekwon McMillan, was back there, and I like Raekwon McMillan, but he doesn't have the same movement skills as Marte Mapu. So that'll be nice to see him in that role and things of that sort. You have better players there who can also contribute at their positions, and that's what I'm excited about.
And another special teamer I really like as well is Mack Wilson, who obviously had the big hit last year on the Jack Jones return.
Marcus Jones touchdown. Yeah.
Yes, I got my Joneses mixed up as remembering the one who brought a gun to Logan as opposed to the guy who can be a gadget player for you.
Yeah.
So I gotta take the shots when you can. One other player I really like that made this roster that proved himself, obviously Pop Douglas is an obvious choice, but I got to go with the guy. We went down this rabbit hole a few times. We don't have to go down again. We can just say So it's our friend that was on the train, Mr. Keyshawn Butte, or Butte, however you want to pronounce it.
Well, he says obviously booty, which I think is absolutely insane, but.
Yeah, I'm not going that route. I'm calling him the boy, you played at LSU in Cajun country. I'm calling you Butte or Butte, one of the two.
Yeah.
We'll go Butte. It sounds more French.
Sure.
Oh, with a little Cajun knock on it. Do you see him being I don't even want to say like a solid piece. It's just more of on the level of contributions that he can be. Like, will he not top contributor, but do you feel like he'll get his chances to shine, or do you think he'll mainly probably have to earn it slash be a special teamer for most of the year?
I think he'll have more opportunities than I initially thought, if only because I'm not sure that Tyquan Thornton is on the active roster in a couple of days. I think he'll probably end up on IR if his injury is, you know, anything substantial. And the fact that we haven't seen him since, you know, going down in Green Bay seems to kind of indicate that it's relatively serious. So I think he'll have the opportunity, and I think he'll make the most of it. I really like what he brings, especially over the middle of the field. And you really don't think that often, because he's not necessarily a slot receiver, but he can play and catch balls over the middle and obviously make something happen. I think he's really good after the catch. He was always been really good after the catch, even when he was at LSU. So I think he will have a role, and I'm looking forward to seeing what his role will be. I think obviously DeMario Douglas is going to have a bigger role. I think he's someone who will play a lot of snaps early. I think, you know, Butte will have his opportunities and he'll make the most of it for sure.
So obviously, I think we talked about before. We mainly, I'm trying to remember if I remember this right with the receivers, because that's the. We'll talk about Kendrick Bourne in a minute. That's from the moment you and I have started speaking about a year and a half ago. For many conversations, Kendrick Bourne's been a guy that we've always talked about. Obviously, now in the doghouse. But before we go and we go down different routes, two is a good company, but three is an even better company, because joining us now, the one and only Pat Lane. Pat, how are you doing tonight? Joining McGarvin and I for some Patriots 53-man roster talk.
Yes, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Sorry, I'm a little bit late here, but late to the party. Looks like you guys are already having fun, though. I brought some goodies with me, though. So, I mean, I didn't actually, but if I was, they're just my takes. That's all it is. You know what I mean?
Goodies or takes? That's all that's
there you what
matters. We're here for not only the good takes, but the goodies that are takes, which I think I just found the podcast title through that. So thank you very much for that. So the main things we covered so far, but I'm going to circle back to it for a second. We were talking about the whole quarterback situation, and since you're here now, what's your take on it for more or less the backup quarterback situation that is non-existent at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters. To be completely honest, I mean, you know, it's like, it's one of those things for me that I just think when you look at who they had there, you saw what Zappe had. And clearly you saw a different guy last year, and maybe it was, you know, guys were open or whatever the case may be. But I looked at it and just, I feel like, hey, the Patriots are in an okay situation at quarterback with Mac Jones. If Mac Jones goes down, I had zero confidence in Zappe being good at this point, from what I had seen, at least in this offense. And so whoever that guy might be, fill in the blank, whether it's Colt McCoy, whether it's Zappe again, if he gets through waivers, whether it's Malik Cunningham, whether it's, you know, Carson Wentz, whoever it might be, right? I look at that guy and I think, yeah, I mean, okay, fine, he's the backup quarterback. Like, but it's not going to be a situation where Mac goes down and I'm like, oh, no, we're good because we get this guy behind him. That's not the situation. And I don't think that's the situation with any of these guys. And maybe Zappe gets scooped up by someone. I don't know. But I just look at him and I think, okay, yeah, maybe he's good enough to be a backup on some team, but he doesn't light the world on fire. And so we needed a bunch of other positions and ultimately looked at it and said, well, you know, and I think the running back's the same situation where you look at it and just say, like, you know, and tight end for that matter. Yeah, we need guys. We can't possibly go into a game with two running backs or with one quarterback for that matter. But like, there are other guys that we need to get on the initial 53-man roster. Maybe we're going to put a few of them on IR, but we had to get them through that initial 53. And we're not heartbroken if we lose any of those guys, because ultimately they're not difference makers on a real NFL team.
Yeah, even more than being myself. Yeah, that was really well put. Even more so than not being difference makers, they weren't even like. I mean, legitimately, and I really do feel this, and I know it's going to sound like I'm going to sound like a Zappe hater, and I always do because I was never in on that guy in the first place. Not only were they not difference makers, they were players who I thought would like actively damage the offense by playing, right? Like I think of someone like J.J. Taylor, and I know people love J.J. Taylor, but like he just doesn't do enough to where I'm like, yes, he needs to be on the roster. Yes, we got to, you know, he has to have a roster spot. Same thing with Bailey Zappe, where I'm like, if Bailey Zappi's playing, they're kind of in trouble, especially behind that offensive line. I know we spent a lot of time over the course of training camp just bemoaning the terrible offensive line. And then when the preseason came, everyone's like, look at this terrible line. How can anyone play behind this? I really don't think Zappe did that line any favors, just holding onto the ball, especially in that Green mm-hmm. Bay game. There were a couple plays he had. He had Kayshon Boutte and Tyquan Thornton open on double verts on play action, and both of them came wide open, and he hesitated on the throw to Tyquan is who he looked to first, and he hesitated on the throw, turned, and then got sacked. And it's like, okay, like maybe he's just a little nervous. And then it continued to happen. We saw he put the ball on the ground three times against the Titans, and it's not like they have a formidable pass rush. It was just absurd.
Yeah, that's bad. You can't fumble three times in one game. You just can't do it.
No, I feel like, too, with this whole Zappe situation, like, we were talking about this before you came on, but obviously his games – look, obviously, I like to point out the one game I was at, the Detroit game, which I still feel like is an anomaly. Like, them going over six on fourth down, and, like, they – like, Detroit had a lot of self-inflicted wounds in that game. And then Cleveland, like, we know what Cleveland was. But the big anomaly with him still is that Bears game where there was a Zappe chance at Gillette Stadium. You were there, so you would know more than us, but – I still say this, and I will always defend this take, that Bears game was just a bad team effort overall. Like, offense, nothing was clicking. Special teams, nothing was going. Especially defense, because I'm sorry, when you're getting cooked by Dante Pettis and Equanimee St. Brown, you're not having a good night at your office. So that's where this comes into play, where I said last year with the draft process, they drafted Zappe because they knew Sidham was going to be on his way out. Now, with Zappe, he was capable at the time. But what we've seen from this summer, preseason through camp, it just – there's not that faith anymore. So if he ends up back in the practice squad, it is what it is, but I just can't see a world where he is your number two going forward.
Right. Or he's, you know, your backup, but he's not really your backup. He's your number two, but he's not like, it's not because you have faith in him. It's just because you need a guy to be your second backup.
Yeah.
Right?
I mentioned that before you came on, where I didn't think they would cut him, even though I thought he was really, really bad this summer. I didn't think they'd cut him just simply because they didn't have anyone else. And there aren't, right. You know, it's not like a wide array of quarterbacks out there. You can just go and pick one up and, you know, drop into your offense. But I mean, he was not very good. So I understand if they kept him. But I think it's a little encouraging in a way if, you know, the Patriots have these guys who aren't going to contribute to the team, and instead of holding on to them as they have in the past, just kind of moving on, like, all right, well, he's not going to get it done. He just needs to not be on the team. I know, like I mentioned earlier with some of the tight ends, people were, you know, like, well, you know, they got to keep Sokol. They're going to play, you know, a lot of 12. And I do agree that they will play a lot of 12 personnel. But, you know, if Sokol's not gonna, you know, not gonna be a difference maker for you on the field, then he just needs to not be on the field. Like if he is just a body, go get a better body.
Correct. And it's also the 53-man roster, right? It's the initial 53-man roster. Yep. You got to get guys through to get them on IR. Nobody's picking up Matt Sokol. Like nobody's doing that, right? Yeah. So you can get him onto your practice squad, and you can elevate him for games, right? Like he doesn't even take up a roster spot. He's just on your practice squad, right? So. You know, it's not, we're not worried about any of those guys going off and being stars somewhere else, right? And I think, you know, get that Bears game, by the way, that take is aged like fine wine by me, where I just called out everyone that was chanting Zappe's name. It drove me insane. And I put the blame for that squarely on Bill Belichick. I don't blame Belichick for much, but that was one of the worst decisions he's had in a long time to start Mac Jones in that game on a Monday night in prime time, coming off of an injury. We could clearly see he wasn't fully healthy. And he goes into that game and plays like garbage and you pull him? Like, I couldn't believe that they did that, right? And so I thought from the beginning, you should have started Zappe from the beginning in that game. If you start Zappe from the beginning and he plays the way you play, everyone wakes up on Tuesday morning saying, wow, we got our teeth kicked in by the Bears and Bailey Zappe stinks, which is what everyone should have been saying on Tuesday morning. But instead, everyone was talking about Mac Jones because you started Mac when he wasn't ready on Monday Night Football, which was dumb. And then you put in Zappe and he was terrible. And it was like, well, now you're stuck with Mac. And, you know, you can't go back to Zappe even if you wanted to, right? So that was the hard part for me where I looked at it and said, man, you really, really screwed that one up.
100%. That's just the thing, because it goes from the simple conversations of everyone going, hey, do we have a QB battle in Foxborough? You have obviously all the talking heads and your guys' neck of the woods basically going on their rants. Shout out. I'm not even giving a shout out, but we know who we're talking about. His name starts with an F. But you're basically giving those people ammunition that you shouldn't be by doing that. You opened that version of Pandora's box, and from there on, that's why this whole came this whole quarterback competition. That's what became of this whole, oh, Mac's off the guy, yada, yada, yada. Like, I want to transition this into Mac because it is a quarterback. Obviously, quarterback's a huge position. But I was saying this to myself today where I'm like, in order for Mac, I'm not even looking at him for this offseason to get a contract extension. Just, I think he has to play well enough to get his fifth year, and then we'll worry about extending him.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 2025 problem. That's not a 2024 problem. And then as for play on the field, look, obviously they're not going to be throwing screens, and where I want to shoot myself or pull my hair out after every screen pass on first, second, and third down. I see a world with him where, look, you let him loose, we get 2021 Mac or even a version of it. My only thing is for him just to turn the turnovers down. Go from, like, I don't even remember how many he had last year, but if he can keep it between...
He had 11 interceptions last year.
If he can keep that number in single digits, I think we're rocking and rolling. I think that's being a little unrealistic, but, like, if he can realistically be 8 to 9 even, like, go down by 2 or 3, I think it's viewed as a good season by him. Obviously, you want to look at stuff like yards and touchdowns. I look at more of the interceptions on his part into what could be a successful season for him going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think the interception total should have been much lower. We had obviously the slate of games in the beginning of the year where he would just like panic throw the ball up to Devontae Parker. I think that's also a function of the Baltimore game. He also did it in Miami, and I believe he did it against Pittsburgh. It was insane. It was like, stop doing that. But it, I think that's also a function of the offense he was in, right? If your offense doesn't have any built-in answers, he's going to try to find an answer, and that generally includes panicking. And I think Mac's always kind of been that kind of guy anyway, where if things don't look right and he doesn't have an outlet, he will just throw that motherfucker up. Just, here we go. Like, whoever's down there, good luck. And he'll just, like, put it up. And we saw that early last year. Exactly. And that one worked out. But that's just a function of, like, we all saw it, you know, like, every third down, it was four verticals with, you know, with Mondre leaking out from underneath. And it was like, all right, cool. But if that is the only play and and Mondre has to stay in the block or whatever the case is, he's going to have to just throw the ball up. I think Bill O'Brien getting him more answers, more predetermined, like, all right, cool. If this isn't here, here's where we should go. And being able to voice that and, you know, explain that to him. And I think that's something that Max said, in a piece by Albert Breer, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, maybe actually only a week and a half ago, but he basically, you know, praised Bill O'Brien as he has been doing since he got here. It was just like, essentially like, hey, you know, he's really great because he has answers and he can tell us what to do. Like, that is a damning quote. Like, and you know how Mac is, like, you know, the way he talks, he's kind of a goofy guy. And so it comes off as innocuous, but I'm like, that is a calculated sentence because the implication there is that the guy that you were with before didn't have the answers or couldn't give you the answers.
100%.
And so I think having that will help turn down the turnovers because it's not, you know, hey, we got to throw it up to Devontae Parker 15 yards down the field on every third down because there's literally nothing else we're doing.
Right. Well, and I think part of the interception numbers, I don't think 11 interceptions is a terrible season. But I think when you look at the rest of his statistics compared to the 11 interceptions, that's what...
14 touchdowns is terrible. 14 touchdowns and 11 touchdowns is atrocious.
Right. And so that's one of those ones where you look at it and say, if he's throwing 35 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, we can live with that. Yep. That's okay, right? Because we have the production coming from the offense, you know, from the passing game. If he's not throwing enough touchdowns, he's got to really limit the interceptions, because you're winning games by not losing the game for the team, right? You're out there throwing 14 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. You're actively losing the game for the team, not winning the game for the team, right? And so that, those are the things where we got to clean that up. And again, so obviously I want him to limit the turnovers, but I'm not quite as worried about the interceptions. I want to see those touchdown numbers go way up, right? I want to see him in the mid-20s and pushing 30 for touchdowns, because he can do that and he should be doing that, right? And so, you know, it's one of those things. We had that conversation last year about Matty P, and, well, you know, he's a defensive guy and defensive guys have to go against offenses and so on and so forth and this and that. And that's true, that he should know how to run an offense. But the difference is, you don't know all of the intricacies. Yep, you have an idea. Hey, I can attack this defense with this offense. Great. But the problem is that when now the first read isn't there, now you got to go to the second read. And then the second read isn't there, now you got to go to the third read. Well, what are those guys doing? I don't know. We just ran the play.
Verticals.
You know what I mean? And so, right. So it's like, and so if you think that that specific play is going to work, now you don't have a backup. Now you don't have anything else to run, right? And so there's no answer where it's like, hey, okay, when this happens and that breaks down, because it's going to, do this instead. If you're a defensive coach, you don't know that because you haven't been an offensive coordinator before. Bill O'Brien knows those things and is able to give Mac those answers. And now Mac is able to confidently go into the game knowing, okay, we're going to run this play. If that breaks down, I can go to here. And if this one breaks down, I can go to there. And if that one breaks down, I can go to there. I mean, listen, they were talking about last year, you know, they'd install something all week long and then on Friday be like, nah, it's not going to work, and just scrap it. And it's like, you can't do that. That's crazy. Then you're running, you know, so it's like, that's the type of stuff where it was dysfunction of the highest order, right? And now we're getting away from that. And so, of course, we hope that everything will improve because of that. And you have to feel pretty confident that it will.
But that's just the thing, though, where now we know that there's that improved self-confidence, because instead of playing fuck around and find out on every third down when you're just, like McGarvin was saying earlier, where you're just hucking in the air saying, oh, someone's going to catch it, but then, yeah, it's the other team. Because like we know, there was the – Miami, I remember that game just because there was the one interception that I don't purposely put on him. I'm trying to remember who was – I think it may have been Devontae Parker whose fault.
It was.
Yeah. The one in the end zone? Yeah.
Yeah. That was Parker, because they were like looking really good on that drive, and then that interception like changed everything. Then obviously he was sacked by, I think, Melvin Gordon, and there was the fumble recovery, but that's neither here nor there. I just want to see a Mac that's confident in his play. And like even going back to 21, I know some people who – point the one Buffalo weather game out as, oh, he's a bad quarterback. It's like, oh, he went that game went only through for three passes, where I literally want to point out Jimmy Garoppolo went 6-for-8 in an NFC championship game and they won on the ground. But that was more, I think that's more of a stat of quarterback trust issues than the one in Buffalo. The one in Buffalo is just Bill being like, hey, the weather sucks tonight. We're not going to take a chance throwing the ball against a great team like Buffalo. And when they were nipping on their heels at that moment, I don't think people remember that, because obviously, right, the Patriots got cooked in the wild card round. But that was a game where they had to go in there and win. And they look, it was unorthodox, but they won it. So this year with Mac, going back to this year, I look at, like, the one big thing, Pat, I'm saying about Mac and the Patriots this year is they got to steal a couple of games. Because, look, their schedule out the hop, it's not easy. Like, I look at a game like – I want to say the Jets game, but I don't, just because, look, we obviously know. Last time they beat the Jets, I was – 22, and I'm turning 30 in about 3 months. So I'm going to say that right now. But with the, I look at games like the Dallas Cowboy game or even the Buffalo game on New Year's Eve, or hell, the Miami game at the end of October. Go into one of those buildings and win one of those games. Kind of like last year how, look, they had Buffalo on the ropes until Nick Folk kicked the field goal and Hines ran it back. They had, I know you were there, the Green Bay game where I feel like they basically just gave up and said, okay, yeah, we'll take the L. And then the Minnesota Thanksgiving game where, look, all the swearing I could do at Alex Kemp put aside, they ended up losing that game because of little mistakes. So I want to see them go into buildings and win a game, especially too, because one of those games is in a prime 425 slot. So I'm just here to say, you got to make the most of your opportunities that are given to you.
100%. And you're right. Like right now, do people think the Patriots are going to go 11-6? No, but I think they're capable of doing that. But in order to do that, you have to win some games that people don't necessarily think you're going to win, right? I think they're going to split with Miami. I think that they have a chance to go 2-0 against the Jets. They may not, but they have a chance to go 2-0 against the Jets. And that's what takes you from 9-8 or 10-7 to 11-6, right? To 10-7, 11-6. And I think that those are some of those things, right? And the schedule was hard. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the schedule is not hard, but you should wipe the floor with the Commanders. Like you should crush that team. You should beat that team thoroughly, right? The Giants are a pretty good team. You should beat that. It's a 50-50 game. You should win that game. After the Cowboys are a pretty good team. That's a toss-up game. You need to win that. So if you're trying to find those wins, the Cowboys game is one that I have circled on my calendar where it's like, that's a game where, yeah, the Cowboys are going to be favored and people love the Cowboys and think they're this great team and this and that. You got Mike McCarthy over there on the sideline. They're not as good as people think that they are. That's a game that you can win. And if you win games like that, that's where you get you get those wins from, and that gets you into the playoffs, right? And so those are those games for me where I kind of look at it and sit there. And, you know, you're talking about last year. You didn't even mention the Vegas game or the Cincinnati game where they had that game won. That game was over. They were winning that game. They were in the red zone. And Mondre fumbled,
yep.
Right. And so you're just like, man, like they had it just like they did the year before against Miami opening game and Damian Harris fumbles. Right. And so it's like, those are the things where you look at it and just think like they were so close. They were a very flawed team last year and they were a few bad mistakes away from being a double digit win team. And ultimately, you look at that and say, if they can do a little bit more this year, now you can easily see that double-digit team. And again, you got to win some of those games that they're not expecting them to. But I think they're capable of doing that.
I agree. I think there's a five-game stretch down there from the end of October straight through the middle of December that I think it might even be a six-game stretch that I think they can really get fat on, as the phrase has been said, right? You start with Miami, Washington, Indianapolis, New York, Los Angeles, and then Pittsburgh. I think they can weather that. They can, all of those games are winnable games, in my opinion. Obviously, at this point, things obviously will change the next month or so, but, those are the games that you quote unquote should win. Obviously you have the Chargers in there, yep, and everyone's going to have them as like, oh, that's not a game they're going to win because Justin Herbert's so great and the Chargers are a good team or whatever the case is. And I just don't necessarily think that's the case. Obviously Justin Herbert is great, but I don't think they're a great team. So I think that's a winnable game. Pittsburgh, same kind of thing. Obviously it gets tough at Kansas City, but then you close out with Denver, Buffalo, New York. You can win two of those three games. I've been saying from the start of this year, that this is probably going to be a 9-8 win team. You can talk me into 10. They will have to steal a couple of games, and those are the kind of games I'm looking at: the Denver game, the Los Angeles game, the Dallas game, like Pat mentioned. I think that's another good one where like everyone kind of like, oh yeah, no, Dallas is the better team. And I think football is too, there's too much variance in football for everyone to just kind of like mark it off like, well, this team is better, so they're gonna win. The better team doesn't always win. The better team that day does. So
right.
Yeah, that's where the term any given Sunday comes in. The thing I was going to say is I think they have to go – I think if they want to go 10 wins, I think you have to be 2-2 going into that Saints Week 5 game. And even going to the Colts, I want to say something. I want to see that – I want to see more of that – like if you guys remember the Colts game from last year, I want to see that team. I see that game or the Cleveland game were still their two best games of the year where mistake-free football basically was played in four corners and all four sides of the ball were clicking. Now, obviously, look, you're playing Sam Ellinger, so it's not really fair. But at the same time, too, they bullied him for 60 minutes. They literally just kept throwing him to the ground, ragdolling him. I've been saying this about the Pittsburgh game for a while, that game feels like a playoff eliminator game. That Thursday night primetime game, loser of that game, you're either going to be not eliminated from contention, but it's going to feel like it. Like, when a college team goes from one loss to two losses, it's just, their playoff hopes are getting snatched from them. It's the same sort of logic. I didn't mention Vegas or Cincinnati just because I tried to block out Cincinnati loss and celebrate Christmas. That's what I was trying to do.
Yep.
But and then obviously I don't know if I ever told you this, but I watched the Vegas game at a family Christmas party. So basically there's everyone being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then there's me inside having a mental breakdown. That's how football goes. I also, Miami week two, I penciled in as a win and people were like, oh, why are you doing that? And I'm like, because we're wearing the throwbacks. I know it's a dumb way to look at things, but those jerseys on Sunday Night Football, I'm sorry. That seems like a win. One game, I'm borderline tempted. I really like them on the spread, but I wouldn't be shocked to see them win just because week one's goofy. What if they win week one? I know it's a very far cry considering who they're playing and everyone's, because I feel like everyone and their mother is going to say, oh, no, Patriots are going to get their ass kicked. They're going to get cooked. But then I think that game's going to be a dogfight, honestly.
I agree.
I can't see a world where it's a close game. Like, even if New England loses by like a field goal, or it's a game like, for example, the Buccaneers game for when Brady came back. That's the big reason too why I'm kind of tempted to say, like, hey, what if they win that? Because a little TB12 magic in the house that day. Yep. It's just, it's me being crazy, but like, if they go 1-0 and win that game, they are going to cast a lot of attention on themselves that next Monday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that game is more winnable than most people do. I think Philly does win, but I think it's, I don't think it's going to be some grisly blowout or anything. I think it's going to be pretty close. And that's just because Philly has been my NFC team since 2008. And so I follow a lot of Philly, a lot of Eagles football. And last year, I know they made it to the Super Bowl, but they weren't like some kind of like dominant, we're just going to blow everyone out, except when they played the Giants. They're not like a team that's like, hey, we're going to go out there, we're going to kick someone's ass for 60 minutes. It's going to be great. They play a lot closer. And I think the coaching advantage is definitely in Foxborough. So I think it'll be a little closer than everyone kind of expects, because I think whenever a team ends up in the Super Bowl, everyone's like, oh yeah, they had a great year. They were like dominant the whole time. And that's not what Philly was. And I don't think people are going to remember that because they played in the Super Bowl. So obviously you see a Super Bowl participant from the previous year, everyone's immediately going to be like, oh yeah, this is an ass kicking waiting to happen. I just say pump the brakes. And we'll just kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting too, because this is what they built their defense for, right? Mm-hmm. They have all these fast guys out there that are playing to stop a team like Philadelphia. And so you're going to get to kind of see that experiment play out in week one. And so I'm excited to see where it goes. You know, I don't know what type of impact Marte Mapu and guys like that are going to have, but I think there's a chance that those guys come through and all of a sudden we're looking at a close game and the Patriots have a chance to go up 1-0. That'd be wild. And especially on Tom Brady night, like that would be
a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah. Even last year too, Philly barely beat Detroit last year, 38-35. And even I'm just thinking right now, the Super Bowl participant from 2021, Cincinnati, I'm pretty sure, didn't they lose to Pittsburgh in week one last year?
Yeah, they sure did.
Yep.
So Pittsburgh kind of came out, because that's the thing. Week one, there's always goofy results. There's like a goofy team that wins that like no one sees coming. It's just something I wanted to throw out into the universe and hopefully the football gods. And I can't believe I was saying that 12 days away for us, but 9 days away from football is just surreal to me. 12 days away as I am recovering because I have a wedding the night before. So Sunday's going to be a fun day for me, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. But then, ultimately, what was I going to say? This team is just, it's basically, I was telling McGarvin this before he came on, Pat. This is a team this year that every Sunday, it's going to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to keep saying to myself, even if they like have a bad loss, just keep going to yourself. We're not the Arizona Cardinals. We are not the Arizona Cardinals. And I know we've mentioned them a lot on here, but look, they're playing themselves. They're doing it to themselves. So with New England, though, it's excitement and there's everything else. And even though you're saying Mop would have an impact, the one guy I look to have an impact that's a rookie right away, I've been a really big Keon White guy ever since he got drafted. Because I was even saying too, McGarvin and I spoke about a week ago, he already looks like a man. Like, you know, some rookies like this. Like, he looks like a man. Like, he looks like he's just going to go in there and just just fuck shit up. He's gonna be that kind of player where
He plays angry. He plays angry.
That's it.
Right? Yeah. He looks like he just got drafted by the Patriots, man, and he's pissed off out there. You know, and it's wild. I mean, it's like it's fun to watch. It's fun to see a guy play with that type of edge. And so, you know, and yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do too. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. And don't forget now, you know, you talk about the schedule going, but by the way, you mentioned the Pittsburgh game, that's the away game I'm going to this year. So I'm excited about that game. That'll be fun. But no, you know, I look at it and I think, all right, week one is Philly. Sure. Super Bowl team coming off the Super Bowl loss, wonky things usually happen week one. Week two, you get, you know, Miami, no Jalen Ramsey, right? So now they don't have the number one corner. I know they still have a good secondary and they still have a good team, but like there are flaws in that team. Week three, you get the Jets. I don't know what the Jets, I mean, no one knows what the Jets are going to look like. I know that they have talent, right? I know that Rodgers is there. I know that, you know, Garrett Wilson's there. I know that they have talent, sure. But nobody knows what it's going to look like when it gets out there. What happens if they lose their first two games and they're 0-2? And the New York media is crucifying Aaron Rodgers. What's he going to do? Like, how is he going to respond to the teammates? How is he going to respond to the media? What's he going to do? Like, we don't know the answer to that question. And so is there a chance the Patriots start 2-1, right? I don't know, right? But if they do, now all of a sudden we're looking at it saying like, whoa, okay, this team maybe is pretty good, right? And now we can move forward and now the narrative starts to shift on that team, right? And so, you know, they could also start 0-3. Like, I don't know, right? So that's why I think that this year is so interesting because there are so many question marks. What I think they did a good job of this offseason is building up enough depth that we can look at them and say they're going to be a competitive team. They may not be a great team, but they're going to be a competitive team in all areas, right? On special teams, on offense, and on defense, they're going to be a competitive team. And so when teams do that and they don't make mental errors and beat themselves, they give themselves a chance to be good in any game and to win any game. And if they can continue to do that, and it looks like they're set up to do that, if they can actually do that this year, then it's gonna be a fun season because, again, you know, they're not going to win the AFC East. They're not going to win the Super Bowl. But, like, they're going to be a hard out for any team that they play, and that makes watching them a lot more fun.
Something else I want to – well, two things I want to point out. One, how good is Christian Wilkins going to look in the New England Patriots uniform next year?
Lord willing.
And the other is I didn't realize this until today of how much cap room they have for next year. Obviously, the cap's credit card spending, but I believe they're in the top three, if not in the top two, for cap spending for 2024. So it's just something to keep drawing because obviously 2021, they were – it was all offseason. It was Patriots will be back. They have all this cap. It's different when you have a competitive team that's like fringe playoffs or potentially can sneak into a wild card and have all that cap room compared to that 7-win team that's looking to get back into it. If now that right. It's like a fringe team with all that cap room, I also think it's better to go out there and acquire people compared to 2021, which, look, we can talk about and debate all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the amount of cap space is especially valuable if this draft class ends up panning out, right? If you're going into the offseason with what is it, like, you know, 90 something million dollars in cap space, but you don't have a glaring need at wide receiver, you don't have a glaring need at corner, you don't have a glaring need on the interior of your offensive line, you can get pretty crafty with what you're going to do with that money, right? You can now do some more luxury things. Oh, we don't necessarily need a, you know, top wide up, but we have the money and we can just go ahead and pick one up anyway, kind of thing, as opposed to having to use all that money to, you know, fill holes, right? If this draft class hits, right, I think they're in a great position. But obviously that's a big if. 11 of the 12 draft picks made the opening day roster, so we'll see. Fingers crossed. It's a good sign to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I think that depth, that, you know, salary cap, that cap space, there it is. That's what I was looking for. That cap space helps them because they have a lot of players they need to get signed. They have Kyle Duggar. They have Mike Onwenu if they decide to sign him. They have, you know, Matt Judon. They have Josh Uche. They have the cap space to sign all of those guys and still be able to run the team that they want to run, right? And, you know, throw some of that money to 2024 and make some of those other years more manageable because they have the cap space in 2024. And so you're able to look at that and say, all right, we can, maybe it's not feasible to sign Uche and Onwenu and Duggar, but maybe they're like, well, we can move some money around here. And so, you know, we can make it work because they still have a little bit of cap space this year too. So you can bump the cap number up a little bit this year and kind of, you know, play with the numbers a little bit. So I hope that that's one of the things that they're going to be doing because Kyle Duggar has to stay here. I think Uche really should stay here because they're both really good players. Onwenu, I like a lot. I hope he stays, but he's the guy that I think if I had to pick two guys to sign, I would pick Uche and Duggar and let Onwenu walk because I think we have the depth behind him at guard, and it's also guard. I mean, it's important, but it's not as important as, you know, the position that Duggar plays, which is safety and corner and linebacker, and what Uche can do getting after the passer.
Especially, too, if you have to go into free agency and pay a safety, you know, it costs you any less money. So it's like from that 2020 draft class, I can automatically think, like, next year, hey, Kyle Duggar's going to want his money. Xavier McKinney's going to want his money. So it's – and those two guys went back-to-back picks. I remember on draft night – people, Giants fans being like, oh, you guys only took Duggar because you couldn't get McKinney. Well, it's like, joke's on you. Kyle Duggar's a stud.
Duggar's the better player, yeah.
But it's a good problem to have on all those assets. The only thing I look at more or less is going into this year if there's any worry. Like, we harped on the offensive line before. But before you actually came in, and I figure this is a good way, before, like one of the last topics we can talk about before anything else, is the wide receiver room. And how we see it for this year. Obviously, we're talking about Butte. We're talking about Pop Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you guys, and McGarvin, obviously, since you and I are talking about this, we'll get back to it, but what do you guys think of the wide receiver room, and how do you place each player's potential for 2023?
So I think it's good. It's not great. They're not going to be dominant, right? But I think it's good. And I think it's good enough for them to be a competitive team. I think they have enough guys. I think Juju, which, by the way, I don't know where the media guys are coming up with this knee thing, this made-up knee injury. I'm not really sure what his knee's about to explode in the next week. I don't really know where that came from. All of a sudden, his knee's about to explode. I hadn't heard that before 2 days ago. So, you know, I think Juju, though, gives him some explosiveness. He can kind of do what Jacoby Myers did last year. I think Devontae Parker is who Devontae Parker is. I'm excited that Kendrick Bourne, supposedly there were teams reaching out trying to trade for him. The Patriots said, no, we're going to keep him. Thank you very much. I'm happy to see that because that tells me that they're going to actually use him this year. So I'm happy about that. And then, you know, Taekwon, I think, is probably going to start the year on the IR, which sucks, second year in a row doing that. I don't know if he's ever going to be healthy enough to give them an actual deep threat, but it would be nice if he does. And as far as Booty and Douglas does something that no one else on the team can do, and that's get open quickly in a short area. And that's the type of player that's always done well for the Patriots. And I think he has a chance to do that again here. He's out of the red jersey. I wouldn't be surprised if he is their opening. I think Juju's going to be their opening slot guy, but I think that Pop will kind of be that change of pace slot guy, that Edelman-esque slot guy, as opposed to Jacoby Myers-esque, which is what Juju is. And then Booty's just that guy. I think he probably is the Devontae Parker role more than the Kendrick Bourne role, right? I think he's that outside guy, but he's just shown the ability to get consistently open and make plays, right? And so I don't know how that translates this year. I'm not expecting huge things out of either rookie. If I had to guess, I would say Douglas will have more of a statistical impact this year. But I do think there's a chance that both guys make an impact on the team this year, right? Obviously, they both made the 53-man roster. The Patriots believe that as well. But I think there's a chance that they both do well. But the thing is that there's so many guys ahead of them that I don't know if Booty is realistically going to see the field enough without injuries, is going to realistically see the field enough to really make a difference. Whereas I think Douglas will get a few snaps every game just because of what he can do.
Yeah, I like the wide receiver room. Parker, I think, is criminally underrated in what he can do, being that outside jump ball guy. I think that it's a ball that Mac throws fairly well when he's not being, you know, panicked into it. It's a ball he throws fairly well on that outside. We saw him try to hit a few times to Aguilar in 21, and it didn't really work out. So they went out and got someone who can actually go up and get it. And I like what he offers. I don't know that he can be your best receiver, but I think he has a role on the team. I think Kendrick Bourne, everyone's kind of expecting him to be that guy. I think, though, Tyquan Thornton is an interesting player because he gives you what no one else can in spite of the injuries. I think I'd be more down on Tyquan, and I know that a lot of people have been. It's like every time he's mentioned, someone's calling him like a twig man or straw man or stick man, or he can't be healthy, Mr. Glass, blah, blah, blah. But my issue is that when he's on the field, he's doing exactly what the Patriots think he should be doing, which is getting open vertically. We saw it in camp. We saw it last year on the All-22, even though the ball never really got to him, whether it was for protection issues or, you know, bad passes or whatever the case is, or the bigger issue, him dropping the football. He is getting open vertically, and no one else on the offense does that. So I think there's a specialized skill set there that you can use. So I think that'll be cool. I think if he's getting open vertically like no one else can, and Pop is getting open horizontally like no one else can, I think you have like a lot of different combinations. I'm really curious to see how the snaps are divvied up. I think the only player who will be on the field for a majority of the snaps is going to be Devontae Parker, just because the Patriots don't really have anyone else to play that pure X role, that outside, go up and get it, big body kind of guy. I think he will probably see the most consistent amount of snaps, but I think there are so many opportunities for mixing and matching. Like, what does it look like with Juju on the outside, Parker on the other side, and then Pop in the slot? What does it look like with Juju in the slot, Parker on the outside, Booty on the other side, or Tyquan on one side? And, you know, like, there's so many different permutations that they can do with the wide receiver room they have. I think it's a room that, and we've heard it said in the past with better, with not necessarily better, but with other Patriots teams where they're better than the sum of their parts. I think this is the same kind of wide receiver room. In fact, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, weirdly enough, the 2016, room where you're looking at it and on paper, it doesn't look super good. But then you watch the games and you're like, I don't know, these guys are kind of getting it done all the way to a Super Bowl. So like, yeah. I think that's what my expectation is for this, wide receiver room. I think, 450 yards is realistic for Pop Douglas. I think, 300, 350 for Booty, just because I don't think he'll have the volume, but I think he'll make the most out of his targets. I think those are the kind of realistic numbers. I know that, people are going to want, Pop Douglas to, come up with 800 yards and like 10 touchdowns, and they expect him to be a monster out of the gate. He's going to be Edelman from day one. And I think people just kind of pump the brakes because even Edelman wasn't Edelman on day one, neither was Welker. So kind of give these guys a little time, but I like the makeup of the room. I think it's probably the best room they've had since 2016, right? Like I know that the 2019 room had
for bigger one game in 2019.
Yeah, I think they had bigger names, but I don't think that room as a collective was that good, right? You had obviously Antonio, discounting the Miami game when they had Antonio Brown and everyone kind of looked amazing. You had Josh Gordon, N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers, Philip Dorsett, Julian Edelman. That's not a great wide receiver room. Like that's just not a great. It's not a great room, but they were getting it done. I think this might be the best room they've had since then. Not that they're not that the bar is particularly high. Like obviously, Pop Douglas is going to be better than Damir Bird, right? Tyquan Thornton is going to be a better deep threat than Nelson Aguilar, and so on and so forth. So it's not a tough bar to clear, but I think this is probably the room that I feel the most comfortable with since 2016.
I completely agree. And also, I'm going to say one thing quickly about 2016, and that's if Hunter Henry or Mike Gesicki can be half of what Martellus Bennett was that year, obviously I'm not going to say Gronk for obvious reasons, A, because he was hurt, and B, because you're not comparing him to Gronk unless you're Kyle Pitts and you don't put him in your top four.
What was that about?
I don't know. He put George Kittle and he put Travis Kelce and he put Ozzie Newsome and I forget. I think Shannon Sharp, but he did
Shannon
not
Sharp with the other one. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, that was weird. But that's my thing. If Henry or Kosicki could be half of what Marty was, because I always say this about that 2016 team, that Martellus Bennett was one of the more underrated pieces on that team. Remember, he almost had the game winning catch in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think they win the Super Bowl without him that year. I mean, obviously with, you know, Gronk hurt, but I think even before Gronk, you know, hurt his lung in that Seattle game, he was playing a huge role. Like he was really good that year.
He was. Yeah, he really was. I mean, and that's a guy, and again, like you wonder, does can Gesicki be that type of guy, right? Comes in, gets a 1-year deal, you know, it's a prove it type of thing. Finally gets an opportunity in, you know, in an offense, not finally gets an opportunity, but gets another opportunity in an offense, looks a little different. And now all of a sudden he becomes the quote unquote second option because Hunter Henry is the number one tight end and Gesicki is the number two tight end. And all of a sudden he starts looking really good and kind of, you know, and then earns himself a contract from there. You know, and again, not that he's going to be as good as Marty B was that year, but I think it's not a stretch to say he could get something approaching that.
That's why I'm saying if he can be half of what Marty was, I feel like it would be a successful season for either one of them. And the other thing, too, with Hunter Henry and McGardner, and I pointed this out before, that, look, he's not going to be used as pass blocking because when or run protection, because whenever Hunter Henry gets put into blocking schemes, what happens? He's on his ass more times than he's standing up. So
it's tough.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's just it. Like, if we can get 2021 Hunter Henry, because Hunter – kind of his max security blanket in a way where like the two of them seem to get along both on and off the field. And plus two, if you give Hunter Henry space, he's going to make plays happen. Like I look at games like Tampa or even Dallas from 21, which that when we talk about the Dallas game being winnable, 2021, that's a game they should have won. I always remember that Jones, the Bourne play. Like that's why I think they can go into Dallas and win, or that's a game they should go into Dallas and try to win.
Yeah. That's a tough game. Not going forward at the 50-yard line on 4th-and-1. Like it's just, that's, you know, and we could second guess it all, you know, but I do think you're right. Like Dallas is a game. That's the game I have circled for me. That's like, can they actually pull this off? Right. And so we'll have a little bit of a better idea by that point. I think that's what week four or five?
Week four.
Yeah.
Week four. So we'll kind of see what happens the first 3 weeks. Then you go into Dallas, and if they're 2-1 and going to Dallas and win, now all of a sudden you're 3-1. And you had this really tough, what looked like on paper, this really tough stretch of 4 games and you're 3-1. And all of a sudden the rest of the league is looking around like, oh crap, are the Patriots back? You know what I mean? And now we're on our way. Even if you go 2-2, I think you look at that and say, it also depends on how you play in those 4 games. But if you go 2-2 and play pretty well in those 4 games, I still feel good about that moving forward.
That's exactly, just be competitive, be in around 500, because obviously the last 2 years it's been 1-3 going into week four, where week four then felt like must wins, which, or they were 1-3 after week four, excuse me. So 1-2 after week three, obviously the last couple of seasons. So it's pretty much don't be your worst enemy. And I still view this season as Pandora's box in a way where we don't know what to expect, but we can hope for the best.
Yeah. Yep. Sure. Agreed.
Anyway, gentlemen, that's going to do it. I'm going to say this right now. We got to do this again. This was a lot of fun, even though it wasn't a short time frame. We'll have to get a solid time frame again down the road. But anyway, guys, 12 days away from Patriots football. Can you believe it? Because I don't think any three of us can. That calendar is almost at single digits, and the football calendar is already at single digits with 9 days to go before the NFL season gets started. But anyway, guys, for Cryer Media, this has been episode number 241. Can you believe it? Of YWC Football Talk. Have a good night and go Pats.
I'm Jeff Woods and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Cryer Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent Podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.